Okay, so it's 5 past the hour, I think we'll start. Welcome to this event of the European Society. Today it's my great pleasure to welcome Karel van Miert, Belgian member of the European Commission responsible for competition policy. Mr. van Miert was educated at the University of Ghent and also at the European University Center in Nancy. He started off his career in universities. He worked at the new University of Brussels from 71 to 73 and then embarked on a career at the European Commission, where he was from 1973 to 1975 the office of the Vice President of the European Commission. From 1977, he was head of the private office of the Belgian Minister for Economic Affairs and then returned in 1978 to the University of Brussels as a lecturer on EU institutions. From 1979 to 1985, he was a member of the European Parliament, and from 85 to 88, the member of the Belgian Chambers of Representatives. And now, from 89 till today, he's EU Commissioner, one of the longest serving ones. Today we will hear a lecture on competition issues in Europe. Please welcome Commissioner van Miert.
Thank you very much, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me great pleasure to be here again and to be able to tell you something more about competition policy in particular and the challenges which are ahead of us. Now, I'm pleased to be here again, obviously, it's also because for such an audience, it allows me to speak out about some of the difficulties also related to competition policy and to the European unification as such. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before dwelling on competition issues, I obviously would like to say a few words about the European Union and the coming years and difficulties ahead of us as well, globally speaking. But I think we really can say if one looks 10 years back, that the European Union went to a tremendous period of challenges and development. And just to recall that not even 10 years ago, there still was the wall in Berlin. And we still had a divided Europe. So now, in less than 10 years, look upon these tremendous developments inside the European Union, but also the challenges coming from Central and Eastern Europe and the challenges related to globalization. So even if from time to time we have a tendency to, or should I say, to look upon the negative side of the coin, to discuss more in terms of difficulties and challenges and incoherence, nonetheless, I think it's fair to say that a tremendous progress has been made and that we are bound to make much more linked to the economic and monetary union and also to the further development of policy on the level of the European Union and then later in the coming years certainly leading to a further enlargement and to try to reunite, if I may say so, parties of Europe which has been divided after the Second World War. In this perspective, ladies and gentlemen, we have to make sure that we will be in a position to continue that policy. A policy, again, which has been, globally speaking, successful, but therefore we must be very careful to avoid things which would put that kind of possibility or that kind of development in jeopardy. And therefore, inside the European Union, we must remain in a position to function as it should be, to take decisions, to meet challenges which are coming to us from the outside world. In other words, one can turn it upside down, one can turn in all directions, unless the European Union remains capable of functioning well and will deepening further its institutional framework, unless we are able to do so, we will not be in a position to meet the challenges in all sectors. Be it enlargement, be it globalization, or other problems related to economic development. I wanted to make that plain from the very beginning, because all too often still some people think you can have enlargement. You can meet all kinds of challenges, globalization, commercial issues and whatever, without deepening the European Union, without making sure that its institutions can remain to function properly. That's a completely false idea, and since I'm in Great Britain and in London today, I want to start with that. Because all too often, there is a misunderstanding on this side of the channel that you can have it both ways, have a looser European Union and a more successful European Union. This is an absolutely false idea. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me turn to competition issues. And more specifically to, indeed, some question marks, some difficulties, some challenges which are ahead of us. But before doing so, perhaps I should say a few words about the meaning of competition policy, because even if here I might probably assume that we are convinced that competition policy is needed, that it's part of a modern market economy, so therefore it's something crucial in our economy, one should not assume that necessarily everyone agrees to that. Or let me put it in another way. You will find a lot of people making brilliant speeches about market economy, about freedom, and so on, about liberalization, deregulation. But at the same time, when it's about their case, will take a completely different view. They will be in favor of more economic liberty, but if it suits them, they would like to enjoy the benefits of a nice monopoly. Or if they can acquire a dominant position, they certainly will not refrain from doing so. And if they can escape competition authorities in abusing that dominant position, they will do so as well. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, it's utterly naive to pretend that the market takes care of everything. First of all, not all economic activities are market-oriented. Take energy, for instance. And I'm talking about the situation on the level of the European Union or in the member states. Postal services. Still several monopolies which are around in most of the member states. So that's one thing. There is no market in some of the economic activities in member states or even on the level of the European Union. And there is always a danger of a dominance by one company or duopoly. There also is the fact, a worrying tendency to some extent, that in some areas there are only a few players left worldwide. Take, for instance, the airplanes. More than 100 seats, there are only two competitors left, and only one being able to offer the whole range of aircraft from 100 seats till the upper end of the market. Only one. And I could give you several other examples where the same problem occurs more and more, and where the question is, does it not go too far? Does it not create a new type of problems? Recently we had to think about it when we had to investigate two merger cases related to the auditing and consulting activities. KPMG, Ernst & Young, okay, that's gone now. The other one is still being investigated. But there the real question was, not just put by us competition authorities, but by a lot of companies needing the services of the auditing and consulting companies. They started to be worried that the market became too narrow and that their choice would be such that there would be no real full-fledged competition situation anymore. I'm just giving you that example to show that there is a kind of new problem occurring on the European level, but eventually on the worldwide level, that in some sectors there are only a few players left, as I said, or likely to be a few players left. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for this reason, I think one needs to care for competition policy every day, so to speak, because those pretending that now, even in the European Union, the market will care for that on its own are completely mistaken. The reality is different, and you need to have strong competition authorities having sharp instruments to make sure that there is going to be a level playing field, that competition will remain fair, or at least to do what needs to be done to create fair conditions of competition. So, therefore, the conclusion is, ladies and gentlemen, that one of the challenges we have to face is to continue to convince, including the public opinion, that that's needed, that competition policy is needed, and that it is also in their favor. Therefore, we are not only caring for making sure that the market economy is functioning well and properly, but also that there is something in for the consumers. And that's the reason why, if needed, the Commission takes tough decisions, as we did recently versus Volkswagen, because they were behaving in a way which was denying rights to the individual consumers to buy the car wherever he or she likes in the European Union. And if they do not meet these rights, then competition authorities need to act. Another case I could give in this respect, ladies and gentlemen, although obviously in Great Britain this happened before most of the other European member states of European countries, since there is now some competition, are bound to be some competition in the telecom sector, consumers have a much bigger choice. And in most cases, the tariffs are coming down. In Belgium, for instance, the day there was a second mobile operator, overnight, the tariffs were reduced by 35 to 40%. Previously, obviously, was one enjoying a monopoly and obviously then benefiting from that monopoly, and only the day the competitor went into market was prepared to bring its tariffs down. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it might appear a little bit strange, but one of the challenges, as I said, is to be able to continue this absolutely crucial job in a modern market economy. And in spite of what one would assume, there is still a lot of resistance by the companies first. Although it seems to be a love-hate relation, a company obviously will applaud when the Commission is acting versus a competitor, when he is doing something wrong, and when the Commission then tells him to correct its attitude. But it might well be that next day or sometime later they will be on the other side of the case. Let me just give you a few examples of that. Luxembourg-based broadcaster, CLT, from a few years ago was concerned about the merger in the pay TV area in Germany between Kerik Bertelsmann and Deutsche Telekom. I'm not talking about the actual case. I'm talking about the case which we had to tackle a few years ago. The complainant was CLT. And they were happy that we did take the case and eventually told the combination of German companies to stop that because it was going to foreclose the market. And therefore, not allowing others to come in or even some others already being in to throw them out. Today, we are looking into a similar kind of case. Oh, no, it's not an identical one. There should be no misunderstanding. But again, between Kerik Bertelsmann and Deutsche Telekom being one of the main owners of cable infrastructure. But now CLT is on board because in the meantime, they became partner of Bertelsmann. I could give you hundreds of examples we had over the last years of this kind of situation. Where one day they will be happy and they will applaud. Next day they will be unhappy, get cross, and even get nasty from time to time. Because then you will be criticized exactly for the same things you did previously in the case where they were the complainants. It's like that. And as you know, ladies and gentlemen, one cannot assume that the relationship between companies and public authorities is not that close. So they always will try to get the national authorities behind their case and then do whatever they can to act in their favor. So again, it should be, I think it's very naive to believe that that's not happening. It's happening all the time. And it's not because a company is a private one that national authorities will not intervene on their behalf. Also, that might be a complete misunderstanding. So national authorities are not only intervening on behalf of their companies, they will do absolutely the same, and in the same way when it is about private companies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I could give you a lot more illustration of all that, but what is the conclusion? That is that, one must bear in mind every day, so to speak, that although competition policy generally speaking, seems to be recognized as being absolutely essential. You have to fight for it, you have to demonstrate that, and you have to go over and over again against a lot of resistance and of hostile attitudes. Now, the Commission in this respect, ladies and gentlemen, should behave as an independent authority. And that's indeed also the statute of the Commission. May I recall that we had to take an oath in the hands of the judges of the Court of Justice not to receive, not to accept instructions from governments, trade unions, or companies, or whatever, or whoever. And as long as the Commission will be able to stand up to that, to respect that, there is no danger of not performing the job it should perform in terms of competition policy. But that's a precondition. If the Commission would not be in a position anymore to act in an independent way and stand up against some particular interests or even to governments, then the Commission would not be able to deliver the goods anymore. But again, as long as that's the case, I don't think there is any good reason to pretend that there should be another kind of body to be created on a European level, as was argued in favor of a few years ago, that the Commission should be taken away this job and that it should be given to a so-called independent European cartel office. Again, if the Commission sticks to its guns, to its job as it should do, there is absolutely no need to create such an authority. By the way, it is striking that the only government at that time putting such a proposal to the other member states in order to be included in the new treaty was Germany, saying that the Commission was a too political body and that it should be protected from political influence. And according to what I consider as being our experience, this position does not seem to be in line with what is happening day to day. Now, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, let me now turn to a few more specific challenges. One is still related to the tremendous development of the single market. Although, let's be honest, the single market is not yet there in all areas. There are still several areas where there is no single market yet, like energy, like postal services, and some other related issues. But on the other hand, the single market did change a lot of things in several areas and in several sectors, including that now, across the borders, internally in the European Union, there is a lot of competition in sectors which hitherto were protected from competition, like telecoms, banking, insurance, media, multimedia, sports, and so on. So that means that over the last 10 years or so, there has been a tremendous development of competition policy in the European Union, and now virtually all sectors are covered or are bound to be covered, because even in sectors like energy, one can also spur or feel that this is the next sector where things will move and where competition problems will occur. Because as long as there is no competition, as long as you have to deal with monopoly situations, obviously we are out of business, if I may say so. But from the day there is liberalization, there is competition, then you have to care for the level playing field and you have to take into account that complaints will be filed. The Commission needs to look into these complaints and sort things out. So this is a kind of logic which is often underestimated, that the more you liberalize, the more you need common rules, but also the more you need a strong central body to enforce the rules, to be able to look into the complaints, to sort them out, and to take decisions. This again, I'm saying this specifically here in London, because this often also leads here to a misunderstanding that some people think liberalization is just something which has to do with doing away with rules. No. Liberalization, basically, in the European Union, means that you try to do with conflicting national rules and have one set of European rules according to which the business should be conducted. But then again, the logic is that you need a strong authority to look after that and to be able to deliver the goods. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the challenge in this area has to do with this tremendous development and to cope with this ever-increasing workload, but also with the complication of cases. In this respect, I should like to give, for instance, the example of multimedia. 5-6 years ago, there were no cases. Nowadays, we have many, many, many of them. It might have to do with broadcasting rights. It might have to do with exclusive contracts. It might have to do with alliances. It might have to do with teaming up with other players. Let me give you just the example of BIB in Great Britain, where British Telecom is joining forces with BSkyB in creating this British Interactive Broadcasting Services, which then triggers also concerns by other competitors, fearing that two dominant players, each in its own market, might well create a situation whereby for them there will be no business left, or they might well have big trouble to be able to get into that market later on. I'm just mentioning that case. I'm not giving any opinion because it is being dealt with properly actually, but this shows what kind of problems are occurring now which were not there 5 years ago. So, in the light of single markets, in the light of this development and the ever-increasing intertwining of different activities, this leads to a situation whereby the Commission has to take more and more cases on the one hand and more complicated cases on the other hand. Now, in spite of all the measures we have taken to be more expedient, to be more transparent, to be more efficient, obviously when you have to work in 11 official languages, as we have to do, and if you have a limited number of human resources available, this becomes really a headache. And if it goes on, one day it will be impossible to cope with all these new challenges from that point of view. Certainly also when you consider, but I will come back to that, the future enlargement of the European Union. So I must draw your attention to this challenge, which is linked to the further development of the single market, but also to the economic development as such. Let me now, ladies and gentlemen, very rapidly turn to EMU. One might put a question, what has this to do with competition policy? A lot, ladies and gentlemen, because, first of all, EMU will bring much more transparency. For instance, as far as prices, tariffs is concerned across the borders, it will be much easier to compare the prices of cars, for instance. Today it's difficult, you need to be an expert. The Commission is doing that work twice a year, publicize then the results, which usually leads to the constatation that the same car might be 50% cheaper in one country compared with the other, although we are talking about the single market. This is still the situation today. But with a single currency, obviously it will be easier for people to compare, and then we must see to it that it's people's right to buy their car whatever they would like and where it suits them best. So that's then the other side of the coin, which has to be delivered by the competition authorities and by those in charge of a good functioning single market. But that's not all, ladies and gentlemen. There are different other issues involved in relation to the economic and monetary union. Let me give you the example of state aid in this respect. And this is a challenge as such. But from the day you will have EMU, and that means that some governments will not be able anymore to use their currency to counterbalance some of their weaknesses in their economic system. So then they might well be tempted to turn even more to state aid than they have been doing previously. So therefore, our expectation is that with EMU, we will have to step up to be even more stricter as far as state aid policy is concerned, to avoid that distortion of competition or additional distortion of competition will be created as compared to today. And even today, this is still one of the most difficult tasks to be performed by the Commission, to try to get a level playing field and to do away with state aid with distort competition. And I will not hide that this remains the most sensitive and most difficult goods to be delivered by the Commission, because there you have to deal with authorities, national and regional authorities. And I'm not even talking about a state or aid given by structural funds, that's still a different issue. But Europe, to a very large extent, is still a place where the member states, or most of the member states, are still addicted to state aid, if I may say so. Has been a tradition in Europe, but still it remains to a very large extent a tradition. Let's face reality. The last survey we conducted on this issue, although I hope to be able in the next months to present a more updated one, did indicate that in spite of all our efforts, the amounts of state aid were not coming down. Now, it had to do something to some extent with the specific situation in Germany. But nevertheless, in several member states, the level of state aid is far too high. And what is very striking also is that the most, let's say, most economically developed, except from Great Britain, are the states giving the most state aid. So the champions are Germany, France, Italy, and not, as one would assume, or some people think, the so-called cohesion countries like Spain, Portugal, Ireland, or Greece. No. The ones giving the most state aid are the richer ones, except from Great Britain. Again, that should be stated, because Great Britain, the levels of state aid in Great Britain are far below the ones, for instance, in France or in Germany. But that means that on the basis of state aid, or the state aid being given, in fact, this is enhancing the competitive position of the richer nations versus the poorer ones, if I may say so inside the European Union, but also that between the different member states, it is leading over and over again to a distortion, considerable distortion of competition. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in this respect also, I should like to point out that we have to face a specific challenge. And let me give you a few data to illustrate that. Probably it's not so well known that 51% of the population inside the European Union is living in so-called eligible regions. That means regions where you can give state aid. 51% when we are talking about the structural funds, and 47% for so-called national state aid or regional state aid, but state aid given from the own budget of the nations or the regions. But that means that regional policy is not mainly concentrating on the regions which need help in the first instance, but that it is the aid is being scattered around, if I may say so, virtually everywhere in Europe. And if now one also looks upon it in the light of the enlargement, and everyone knows all these new member states or future new member states, our candidates knocking on the door, will all be member states where the economic and social development is far below the average in the European Union. So all of them will be eligible for this type of aid as well. So if we do not correct that now, we are going to have a situation where over 60% of the population in the European Union is living in eligible regions. What's the point of that kind of regional policy? This is putting really things upside down. Again, a sound regional policy should concentrate on the regions which need that help in the first instance, and not trying to give a little bit to everyone, even in regions which do belong to the most prosperous one in the European Union. So you see the kind of challenges which are ahead of us, because I don't need to tell you that every time you will take out a region and not making it an eligible region anymore, you will have a lot of protest by trade unions, by industrialists, by the local elected people or the members of parliament. And this problem is now going to be high on the agenda, because, as you know, it is our common intention by my German colleague Wolf Matthies, as far as structural funds is concerned, and myself for regional help, to cut it down, or at least to reduce the eligible regions to more reasonable proportions and more reasonable percentages than has been the case in the past. But again, you see the kind of uphill struggle we will have to deliver and the kind of political difficulties we will encounter. Let me now very briefly turn to a few other challenges, ladies and gentlemen. One has to do with technological development in the sense that nowadays, very often, companies or the management of the companies will make the point that because of the needs of technological development, competition rules should be put aside, or competition rules should be ignored. They pretend that unless they will be allowed to go ahead, even if they are dominant players, or even if they would create a monopoly, that it should be allowed anyway for technological reasons, and therefore that competition rules should be ignored. Obviously, we do not agree with that, but it is triggering a new kind of debate on top of the fact that companies now will argue more and more that the real battle is with the American competition and the American competitors, and therefore, again, that we should allow to be re-established national champions or even European champions, and again, that competition rules should be ignored or should come next and not in the first place. Again, we do not agree with that, but I must acknowledge that this is triggering a complicated and often, politically speaking, rather difficult debate. For instance, for those being familiar with the German situation, they might have read in some of the newspapers, certainly, that the mere fact that the Commission, as it is our obligation on the basis of the merger regulation, would look into the new Kerry-Bertelsmann Deutsche Telekom case, is against their technological interest, and anyway, against German interest, because it's about three big German companies joining forces. And so what a strange idea to look into the situation from the point of view of competition. Why not allow that, even if it's leading to a monopoly situation, because they pretend the real battle is on with the Americans. Now, this is a very short-sighted argument and a very short-sighted vision, because the logic of that would be renationalization of certain sectors in the sense that the solutions would be national, and in particular in the pay TV sector, that would lead to national solutions everywhere, at least in the bigger countries, and I fail to see how this would help them to compete with the Americans anyway, apart from the fact that it would be a setback, a considerable setback for the internal market. But you see what kind of arguments are nowadays being developed in the light or on the basis of so-called technological concerns, but then against real and profound and well-established competition concerns. Now, ladies and gentlemen, having said this, it's not always easy, and I wanted to make that point and be very blunt and open. It is not always easy for a competition authority to get it right and to be sure that competition concerns will be in step with technological development and not taking old-fashioned competition attitudes or positions, which indeed might impede or run against technological development. But I think until now we managed to do that quite properly, and I'm sure we will do our utmost to continue that way. But, for instance, take Microsoft cases. It's not because Microsoft should be able to develop, to continue to be developed and to be in the forefront of technological development that we should not have to tell them from time to time to refrain from anti-competitive behavior. If they would include, as they did in some of their contracts clauses, which keep other competitors out or would not even give a fair chance to other competitors, and our duty to do so. Now, in this case, I must say, Microsoft accepted when they have seen that we had a case and that we were determined to pursue that, then they offered to take these clauses out of the contracts and to turn to more normal situation. So you see how this happens nowadays, but it's by no means an easy thing, and certainly not for the competition authorities. Let me also, before turning to a few of the external challenges, say you a few words about modernization. By modernization of competition policy, ladies and gentlemen, we mean that we really have to update some of our practices and our rules. So far away from us to pretend that the rules as they have been conceived and have been implemented and enforced are there once and for all and should be considered as a kind of an once and for all given truth. No. We are critical ourselves about what we are doing and always try to look into the way we are dealing with cases, also from the point of view, what can be made better? How can we update, adapt the rules or the procedures? And in this light, several things have been undertaken. I just wanted to mention the whole complex of vertical restraints between producers and distributors. It's a very complex issue. Well, we are updating that. Also in the light of also with the question how to shed bureaucracy, how to concentrate on the most important questions, and how to be nearer to the markets, how to take more into account economic realities instead of giving the priority to legal clauses. So to be more in line with the market and market requirements rather, so to speak, than to be in line with formalistic, legalistic clauses. There has to be a different kind of balance, and that's exactly what we are trying to bring about, even there again, if it's not always easy. Another area where we are trying to update the rules is a state aid field. There are actually two proposals being discussed by the Council of Ministers. There again, to concentrate on the most important issues and trying to shed smaller cases, but also to make the procedure more transparent and to try to reach conclusions in an earlier stage. So on the basis or in the light of the good experience we had with the merger regulation, also to try to put this discipline in the way we are dealing with state aid cases. But just a few examples, I could give you many others, showing that we are absolutely serious about updating rules, procedures, trying to be more transparent and more efficient. On top of that, ladies and gentlemen, we have been developing over the last years a very close cooperation with the national competition authorities. And I must say that it has been successful, that it is going to be continued, and it will lead to a situation whereby there's going to be a kind of division of work. And if we can leave cases to national authorities, we will do so. In fact, we are already more and more sending back cases to them, given our own workload, and given the fact that we would prefer to develop a system, as I said, where the maximum can be done on a national level, and if it's not flying in the face of the European competition rules, then the work should be done there. We should care for the cases with cross-border effects or where it has to do with globalization. Now, ladies and gentlemen, since time is running out, let me now briefly turn to two specific challenges which are coming from outside the European Union. The first, of course, has to do with enlargement. It did take us a long time because before we have in the European Union a full-fledged competition policy. And as I said, easier, we still will have to care very much for being able to continue that. So just to mention that gives you a flavor of how difficult it will be to make sure that new member states, now our candidates knocking on the door of the European Union, will be able to be part of that. So that means that coming from the experience they have had, they will have to change mentalities, accept competition rules, accept competition authorities on a national basis, allowing them to do their job, but also accept the discipline of the European Union. That means the competition policy of the European Commission or the enforcement policy by the European Commission. That's not going to be easy, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just give you one example to show you that in the field of state aid, because there, you know, the rule of the game is that state aid can only be given when the Commission gives its authorization. Now, imagine the situation in some of the candidates where still a lot of state aid is being given, where several sectors are only surviving because it is still being done, that they, once they are member of the European Union, will have to rely on the European Commission whether to know they can give state aid or not, and have to wait for the authorization, as is the case now inside the European Union. Now, obviously, one can and should take into account specific situations in these new member states in future, but nevertheless, the rule of the game is that all of them have to comply with these basic rules and have to accept the authority of the European Commission. If I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that today in some of the candidates, I'm not going to say which ones, it is extremely difficult just to get a slight picture of what's happening. I must say, even in some of the actual member states in the European Union, it's not always easy to know exactly what's happening. But I can tell you in some of the candidates, it's almost impossible to have a concrete view of what's really happening or not happening. But even then, and having been talking to some of the ministers concerned and some of the governments concerned, they seem to be extremely astonished that that is going to be the case. They still think they can be a member of the European Union and escape this kind of discipline. No one in Poland can imagine that in future, when we are talking about the shipbuilding sector in Gdansk, that next time then they will have to talk to the European Commission. And whether there is still then a kind of seventh directive, as it is called today, we do not exactly know what comes next, but nevertheless, there will be a discipline in the shipbuilding sector, that's for sure. It might well even be that at the end of 2000, there will be no state aid be allowed anymore in this sector. You see, just one example of the kind of situation which is going to occur and what the logic of that is. So now think yourself of different sectors, different cases, different industries, and so on and so on. Just that alone, we are just talking about state aid. So you see, we will have to tackle really a lot of considerable, difficult, politically very sensitive issues from the point of view of competition policy related to the enlargement process. That's not a reason to say that we should refrain from doing so, not at all, but it's a good reason to talk to each other on the basis of real situations and real problems. And may I recall that with German unification, that almost everyone, including ourselves, underestimated the difficulties going together with that. And there, the Western part was able to put a lot of money into that and continues to do so to bring things in line. Certainly one cannot compare that situation with the other Central and Eastern European countries, but it's an argument good enough to make sure or to tell people, be careful. Think about what the realities are and see how they can be sorted out. But obviously in the line of the basic rules of the game of the European Union. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me turn to the last point of my introduction, globalization. More and more cases, more and more things are happening on a global base, or at least on a level which goes far beyond our own boundaries. Many alliances, airlines, telecom, mergers, acquisitions are taking place across the Atlantic or even worldwide. Now, how then will such questions be sorted out? When it is about cases which have mainly to do with the American market and our own market, okay, we can do so in good cooperation with our American friends, which is happening nearly every day. It's not because we had a Boeing case where we could not agree on a common attitude, on a common position to be taken, that in virtually all other cases we were not able to sort things out in a way which was not conflicting. And it's probably not well known, but really we had to deal with many, many cases where at the end of the day we could avoid conflicting positions or even devise common are identical, are comparable remedies, and therefore could sort things out in a way that the company could live with on both sides of the ocean. So this fruitful cooperation, which started in 1991, is being continued. It's our intention to deepen it, and eventually sometime in the coming years, we would also like to be able eventually to exchange confidential information, which is not allowed today, unless the company is concerned to agree to that. So this cooperation still can be deepened. For the time being, it allows us to cooperate and, as I said, on a rather successful basis. So virtually all the big mergers one hears about will be investigated on both sides of the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, and again, we will do so in the spirit and in the light of trying to sort things out in a cooperative and non-conflicting way. Now, ladies and gentlemen, from time to time, it's not good enough because, as appeared in the case of Boeing McDonnell Douglas, that the situation might be looked upon in a different light, that also different interests are involved. But apart from that, when we are talking more and more about world markets, the question is, will the others leave it only to the Americans and to us to sort things out, or do they want to be part of that? And in the Boeing case, it did lead to a debate in Japan, but the Japanese authorities now apparently are considering to have their own merger regulation, if I may say so, to say, well, it was about the world market, we were part of that as well, why should we leave it just to the Europeans and to the Americans? Another example showing you the kind of problems occurring nowadays because of globalization is that in a specific case, Grandmet Guinness, I guess well known to you, and also what they are trading about, it appeared that they had to notify their case to more than 100 different competition authorities in the world. It's almost chaotic. So that leads me to the question, wouldn't it be a good idea to start at least thinking about how eventually some competition cases could be sorted out in a broader framework? Eventually, in the framework of the World Trade Organization. We did put that question already 3-4 years ago, and it did lead to the conclusion that perhaps it wouldn't be a bad idea to discuss about it, and that's actually being done in a working party inside the World Trade Organization. Discussion, not negotiations yet, but at least it seems to be increasingly recognized that there is a good reason or there are good reasons to do so, and see how gradually also on a more broader scale initiatives can be taken or at least some steps can be undertaken. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, there is a lot of work to be done, a lot of difficult issues to be tackled, and I must say that actually we as European Commission and my department, EG4, is doing everything we possibly can to make sure that also in the next century that we will be able to continue this successful policy, because I happen to believe that the competition policy has been one of the major engines also for the single market, alongside with measures which have been taken in favor of the single market. But when it boils down to individual cases, usually it's on the basis of competition rules or decisions taken on the basis of competition rules that things could go ahead. So that's the big challenge which have ahead of us, and I can tell you that's also a big ambition for us, and we are reasonably sure that at the end of the mandate of the Commission we will be in a position to say that's exactly what we had in mind, that's what we did, and now good luck to the others in the next century. Thank you.
Questions about this challenge?
You mentioned the challenge of the European Union to e-sports enlargement. I'd like to ask, to what extent is the Commission ready to give derogation to these countries? Is it going to be any similar to the one that has been given to previous enlargement?
Well, in principle, once you become a member of the European Union, one should accept what is called l'acquis communautaire. That means what has been established, what has been realized in the meantime. And only in exceptional circumstances, eventually in some areas, one can consider a transitional period or in time limited derogation. That's what happened with the previous East German part of Germany, but only for a limited number of years. And then it was not only assumed, but we had to make sure that rules of the game would be implemented in the same way there as elsewhere. So it is limited. And the example I was just given as far as shipbuilding is concerned, it's even hard to see how there a delegation could be given once it will have been agreed that there should be no state aid anymore. For the very good or bad reason, according to your own opinion, that then this would eventually lead, that state aid on one side would lead to the closure of yards elsewhere in the European Union. So it's hard to see how member states would agree to such kind of derogations. So this is a concrete example which shows how extremely difficult and touchy it's going to be. Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure everyone got the question. Perhaps I might repeat it. So it's mainly about the relationship, if I got it right, but tell me if I'm wrong, between the centralized competition authority, which happens to be the Commission, and then the national competition authorities. Well, two things need to be said about that. First of all, to the fullest extent possible, the Commission will cooperate with national authorities, and as I indicated earlier, leave to national authorities what they can do on a national scale. And unless we will be obliged to take the case, and anyway, if it's a cross-border, a case with cross-border effects, we have to do so, then we cannot send the case back. But on the other hand, again, it is our wish, it's our will, that as much as possible should be done on a national basis. The second thing which needs to be said here is, obviously then the national competition authority should be in a position to do so. Now, already now, the Commission is preparing for that on the basis of the FAR program and financial means available in the framework of that program to stimulate initiatives to cooperate with the national authorities in the candidate countries to develop such policies, to develop rules, and also to try to get used to national competition authorities to deal with competition cases. It takes time, it's not easy, but it is already underway. So therefore, one should perhaps not be too pessimistic in most of the cases, that the day the enlargement takes place, that you have a counterpart to which you can talk, with which you are going to cooperate, and which you can stimulate to develop its policies further. And again, we should bear in mind that it has been very difficult in the European Union as it is, and therefore have some, should I say, understanding for difficulties going hand in hand with kind of development. But there should be no misunderstanding about one thing, that on the level of the European Union, we must be able to continue to develop a coherent competition policy. And that means that all member states at the end of the day should be subject to the rules and should accept the authority of those endowed with implementing and enforcing that policy.
One very last quick question.
Oh. Well, this is a very German question, I must say. I keep being astonished that people, obviously supporters of that system, seem to ignore that countries where there is no fixed book price, or net book price, as it was called in Great Britain, do not produce literature anymore. some people tend to think that if you do not have a fixed book price, that's the end of literature. May I recall that 40% of literature sold in Germany comes from translations, mainly from Great Britain and US. So therefore, one should refrain from continuing to tell public opinion that unless you have a fixed book price, and so a cartel, if you like, there is no literature and no culture anymore. Now, having said this, if one wants to maintain that system, and on a national basis one can, because we do not interfere in the national situation, we only interfere in the cross-border effects of that. It's limited to that. So if Germany wants to have its own law, as the French have, they can do so. We won't object and we won't interfere. But if it is really conceived in the interest of literature, as it is being said, then there must be an obligation for those benefiting from the net book price to publicize literature, which is absolutely not the case. You have a lot of publishers in Germany publishing everything except literature. Now, they benefit also from the system, isn't it? So then at least one should think about some of the elements of such a system and eventually see how it can be adapted and modified. For 4 years now, we are seeking a real dialogue and a real discussion on this, but until now it was impossible. So therefore, the Commission had to send what we call a statement of objection with the different points we think needs to be made, but leaves the possibility to the parties concerned to discuss that, and hopefully also to a situation where they will be prepared to sort things out in a proper way and in a way which is compatible with community law.
So, sorry about this, we have a tight schedule today. The Commissioner must be glad there were no questions about Formula One. Thank you very much, Karl van Miert.
Oh, I regret that.
Please do pick up a copy of our magazine. It's located at the exit.